kids are curious. They're looking for what's out there. So we're going to present it, what's out there. We're going to give it to them straight up, what's out there. And so we shared the gospel with them, and that caught on. All of a sudden, we had kids coming in like, you got any more Bibles? I don't, but I'll get more. And so we gave out hundreds of Bibles that year.
Welcome to Stories of His Glory, a podcast where coaches, athletes, and partners of FCA share powerful stories of how Jesus Christ is transforming lives through the world of sports. Each episode, you'll hear real stories of people who've experienced the life-changing love of Jesus. Stories that will encourage, challenge, and inspire you to see how God is moving in and through the world of sports and each of our lives. Stories of His Glory podcast is grateful to Copper Dog Waffles and Coffee for their support of FCA and youth athletics. Copper Dog is located on historic Main Street in Mandan and has the best gourmet waffles and custom coffee drinks. When you go, try my favorite, the Rookie, and definitely try pairing it with one of their amazing coffees. Stop in today for a unique experience, something unlike anything else you'll see in North Dakota. Sweet or savory, there's something for everyone at Copper Dog in Mandan.
Welcome to the Stories of His Glory podcast. I'm Ryan Jungling, Area Director with FCA in Bismarck, North Dakota, and today I'm excited to introduce you to Chad Even. Chad is a middle school social studies teacher, coach, husband, and father. Listen in as Chad shares about his walk with Christ, his calling to be a middle school teacher, and the tremendous impact that middle schoolers have on their schools and on their communities. Here's my conversation with Chad Even. Chad, thanks for sitting down with me here today.
Yes, absolutely. Happy to be here.
I'm pumped about this conversation. I think we're going to hear some pretty cool stories and show just how God is moving just in incredible ways in an incredible group of people that I know you care super deeply about at Wachter Middle School. One of the things that I've learned over the last couple of years is this term from a friend of mine who's also on staff with FCA. He calls it a yesterday story, a testimony of how God's moving. And if we want to share our story, we need to have a yesterday story. And so let's start there. Over the last, it doesn't have to literally be yesterday, right? But over the past couple of weeks or month, is there any story that kind of sticks out that you would like to share with us?
Sure. Well, we just this past August, when we started back to school, you know, normal teacher, first day of class, you have up on the slides for all the students, like, this is about me, this is my family, this is the stuff I do. This is kind of what, in my case, what I coach, because I coach football, basketball, and track there at Wachter Middle School. And then one of the bullets at the bottom said, a bullet that said FCA advisor. And it was so exciting because I had multiple kids in every class that they'd point to the four bracelet and they'd like give me a little head nod or a smile, or they'd look down at it because they know that they represent. They know the significance of the four, what that means to them, and the connection of the four to FCA. And so it was awesome because actually last school year, we did not have very many sixth graders in our FCA group, but that signifies to me how many kids were giving out the bracelet to their classmates, to underclassmen, or whatever it happened to be. So it was just so exciting to be able to see that every class I'd have multiple kids that would like look at the bracelet, then they look up at me, kind of give me a smile and a nod. It's like, hey, we got a connection with each other right here at this moment.
Wow. You had this connection. They may not even, just to clarify for the listeners, right? They may not even have attended an FCA huddle.
Yeah, most of them probably had never attended the FCA huddle, but yet many of them had the bracelet and they understood what the bracelet was. You know, they made the connection that the bracelet was a significance, a connection to FCA.
Wow. That's really cool. That's cool. I love the idea of the yesterday story, like giving something there. And I think that's actually a really cool place to start this episode because we're eventually going to come right back to that. Like, how did that happen? How did that happen? So we'll get there. Like you said earlier, you've invested your career into the lives of middle schoolers. You teach social studies, global studies at Wachter Middle School in Bismarck, and you've been at Wachter for...
Been at Wachter, this is year 12 at Wachter Middle School. Year 25 teaching, so I'm getting up there now. Year 23 with Bismarck, but then when Bismarck moved their sixth graders up, I transitioned up with the sixth graders up into the middle school ranks. And so, yeah, most people, when they look at you and you tell them that you're a middle school teacher, they kind of look at you like caution, like, for real? Like, how's that? Could you not be good enough to get into the high school, or what's the deal? You know, and so I love middle schools. I mean, my entire life has been around middle schoolers and I love what I do and I love middle schoolers.
Yeah. It's really obvious when I see you around middle schoolers, you just like, it just, middle schoolers are attracted to people that care about them. And it's really obvious that you do. And so that's really awesome. So let's go back a little bit. And let's say that you were, it probably was junior high at the time, but a middle school age, what would a teacher or coach of Chad as a middle schooler have said about you or maybe described you as?
So I was probably more, you hate to say it, like the quote unquote typical middle schooler, you know, especially for a male, you just kind of go through the motions of the school day, kind of involved in sports. I lived in a small town at that time, didn't really popularity and all that was on your mind, if you will, as a middle school boy. Faith and stuff is kind of there in the back of your mind. It's not something that's on the forefront, if you will, when you're in middle school. So my teachers would probably just describe it more of just, I mean, hate to say it, but more of a typical kid, just trying to get through this stage of life. I mean, nobody looks back at middle school and thinks that was the greatest years of my life, which is why I love teaching middle school, because I love to be able to, that impact of when those kids are going through such a challenging, awkward time of their life, I get to be that positive impact in their life.
Yeah. You know, what were you interested in when you were...
I was the sports kid. I was involved. If it was going on, I was in the sports, the football in the fall, the basketball in the winter, the track, and then the baseball in the summer. So I was the year-round sports kid. I always had a job. That's one thing. I've always had a job. Probably the strangest fact about me, since I've been in first grade, there's never been a day I have not had a job in my life. Since I was 7 years old, I have had a job. I've had paper routes. I've washed cars. I've delivered pizzas. I've worked at convenience stores. Whatever there was, I found a job within my life. From the time I was 7 years old, there has not been a day that I've not had a job.
Wow. So that's, you're bouncing this job, right?
Yeah.
As a consistent part of your life. You also are in athletics year round, right?
Yeah.
So which sport did you tend to lean to? Or was it whatever season
it was season based. I've always had a passion for basketball. It was always kind of the driving force behind me when I grew up and things like that. Grew up in the 90s, so you had Michael Jordan was kind of the driving factor there. And, you know, everybody wanted to be like him or like Magic or Kareem or whatever it happened to be. So basketball was the sport that I gravitated more towards. Track, you just show up and do your thing for the track season and baseball and stuff. But that's kind of where I gravitated towards. I found myself, my identity, because I was at a smaller town. And so your identity really was within the sports. Everybody knew you in the town based on what sport you were doing, how you were doing within that sport. Even at a younger age, they would kind of be tracking you and thinking, what will this, you know, will he or she be able to do as they get older?
For sure. So what, as you moved into high school, did one of the sports start to rise to the surface for you?
Basketball started to rise up for me. Basketball, I kind of felt that I had a niche within it, if you will. I did well at the other ones, but basketball was the one that really kind of found a niche for me. Kind of had a couple of coaches that just really invested in me in that area. Spent a lot of time at the gym just shooting hoops or out in the street, in the park or whatever happened to be shooting hoops. Went through a lot of challenges within life outside of school. And so basketball was my safe zone. I found myself doing a lot of things within basketball because you can just find yourself, you can lock yourself in a gym and just start getting up shots, working on your skill, working on the technique, whatever it has to be. And it's just a safe place that you can be during that point of your life. A coach at that time really invested. He spent a lot of time with me just in the gym shooting hoops. He would just simply just rebound for me. It was not a conversation taking place. It was just simply, he was there for me. Like, he knew that if I'd call him up and say, hey, you want to get some shots up, he would come on over, let me into the gym at that point, and he would just be there and rebound. You know, we'd just no big conversations taking place or anything like that. It was just, I just knew that when I called him, he'd be willing to, if he's able, he'd come over there and meet with me to shoot some hoops. This is kind of pre-AU and that era of ball. We did do travel tournaments together, things like that. And so that kind of led open opportunities to pursue within college, looking at you and things like that. I had opportunities after high school. We played in the state basketball tournament my senior year, and that opens up opportunities within colleges. They start to look at you and had opportunities to go. I was just like an NAI level player. I was not anything above that. I know what my level was, where I was at within my life, where I could go. And so I was an NAI level player. But then Trinity Bible College, just a small school, my older sister attended there. She's 2 years older than me. And their coach reached out to me because he saw me playing in the state basketball tournament. And I was like, I am not going to go to Trinity. I kind of felt like I am above that, if you will. But he's like, hey, come on up for a visit. So I thought, why not? Every high school kid, if you get a free college visit, you're going to go take advantage of whatever college it happens to be. So I coached a basketball tournament because I was coaching middle school ball, even in high school. So I coached a basketball tournament in Aberdeen, South Dakota. And then I headed up to Ellendale and visited the campus, did the little tour, played for them, did the tryouts, played with them, met the players, everything. Didn't think anything of it. Honestly, I was like, great, that was fun. I got to see my sister and stuff. So that was nice to be able to see her, and went home. And a couple weeks later, like, I was even wrestling with it. I was thinking I knew where I was going to go, my path, my next path, my next step of life, where I was going to go for college and what that was going to look like and who I was going to become, you know, because when you're 18, you know it all and where you're going to go and everything's directed for you. Literally, the only time in my life I was walking out of church, and it wasn't something I was praying about. It wasn't heavy on my heart. I literally heard God say TBC to me. And that changed the trajectory of everywhere I was going to go, because then I ended up in Trinity Bible College. Trinity Bible College is where I met my wife, Jessica. Trinity Bible College is where I found passion for Christ. Trinity Bible College got me on the trajectory of where I am today. But I literally heard, I can still picture it to this day, exactly where I was when I was turning out of the church pew. And I literally heard TBC. And I didn't pause. I didn't stop at that moment. I knew exactly what I was supposed to do. It wasn't like, wait a minute, what did I hear? I knew exactly. It wasn't like I was like gung-ho, like, let's go. At first, I was like, I guess I'm going to go. And so I did it, and honestly, it's the best decision I ever made when I went there. I went there and I only played 1 year. I only played my freshman year. We had a lot of success. We made it to the national tournament for at the level Trinity was. Loved the players I played with. Loved those guys. Playing with them just totally changed my life. The last game I ever played for Trinity Bible College, we had finished up to the national tournament, and I was sitting in the locker room. And at that moment, I knew my basketball was done. And since that day, I bet I played less than probably 10 pickup games in my entire life. I knew that God had given me that passion, and he's filled it with something different in me. And at that moment, I know it's totally weird to say, but I've never had that desire to play city league ball or anything like that. Like, my desire, my skill set within basketball is completely gone because God's given me other talents. I have a son who played, and I loved to, I mean, we spent hundreds of hours in the gym, hundreds of hours shooting, and I would just rebound for him. It was never 1v1 or anything like that. I just spent hundreds of hours rebounding for him and just enjoying that time together with him, but it's never been like, what could I have done or anything like that. God totally, at that moment, sitting in that locker room in Oklahoma City, there was a moment that came over top of me, and I knew this phase of my life is done. I'm ready for the next step of my life. And God has filled it with other opportunities for me besides basketball, because at that phase, basketball was my God. And basketball is what I lived for at that moment of my life. And so he took that away from me. It wasn't in a bad way. I'm like, I'm content with it. There was never any mourning over it. I was totally content. When I left Oklahoma City, when I walked out of that locker room, I knew there's the next phase for me, the next step of my life. And the next school year, I came back to Trinity Bible College. And I just went into the high school there, the public school, and I applied to become a basketball coach. And I said, hey, do you guys need like a middle school or elementary basketball coach? I dropped off, here's a reference about me. I did some in high school, and they called us up and said, hey, we need a middle school boys basketball coach. And I was like, let's do it. I knew that's, God gave me this passion for middle schoolers. Like, let's go. My entire life has been pouring into middle schoolers. So from a kid that loved basketball, I mean, that was my life. If you defined me as who I was in middle school and high school, I would have told you I'm a basketball player. And then I would have told you other things about me. But at that moment, when I walked out of Oklahoma City, I no longer was, I'm a basketball player. At that moment, my life has never been that ever again.
I don't even know what to say. That is like ridiculously powerful. So let's take one step and then we're going to go back a little bit. So when you walked out of that Oklahoma City locker room and you understood at just an incredible depth that you were no longer a basketball player. And if somebody would have asked you then, who are you? What would you have said at that point?
At that moment, I would have just said, I'm just a person trying to figure out the next phase of my life. God was there. God was not deep. God was there. The relationship was there. The spirituality was there. Certainly, you're 19 years old. I'm at a 19-year-old level, maturity level, things like that. But at that phase of my life, I just knew that there's something else for me. I knew that there's going to be something else that's going to come my way. I didn't know, like, I'm not going to think that it was going to be like, I didn't know if it was going to be God or what it was going to be, but I knew there's something else that's going to come into my life that's going to fill this void. I'm not exactly sure what it was going to be at that phase of my life, but I just was totally, it's the strangest feeling I've had about a couple of times about how God got me into Trinity, but like, talk to me through, tell me TBC. And then literally within a year, roughly a year later, it's like that passion that is that's gone from you. And now I've got something else for you. And it was at that point, I was just like, okay. Honestly, I was just like, okay, I am not going to worry about this. I know there's going to be something else out there for me.
Yeah.
Stories of His Glory is brought to you by North Dakota Fellowship of Christian Athletes, where our mission is to lead every coach and athlete into a growing relationship with Jesus Christ and His church. Across North Dakota, FCA is on the ground in weight rooms, huddles, and classrooms, building up bold leaders of faith through sports and scripture. Whether it's a student athlete discovering Jesus for the first time, or a coach finding strength in community, lives are being changed every season at FCA. Want to be a part of the movement? Visit fcand.org to get involved or support the mission. Now, let's get back to the story.
Wow. Take us back a little bit before that, because I think you hit on a bunch of different things that I think we can pull out a little bit. But you talked about this visit to Trinity, and you talked about how God spoke to you and led you to Trinity. What was your faith journey like leading up to that point?
It wasn't that deep. My faith journey wasn't that deep at that point of my life. I mean, I have great parents, older brother, older sister. I'm the youngest in the family. My parents, you know, would have us at church, and, you know, I would go through the routine, if you will, of going through youth group and those types of things when you're a middle schooler, when you're a high schooler. It wasn't super deep. I wasn't into the wild and crazy life. Honestly, I was just kind of going through it. Like, literally my life was, I went to school, I played basketball or, you know, football in the fall or whatever, and I worked. Like, my work schedule was around how whatever sport or activity I was in. Great people that would accommodate that. But there was not a lot of depth to my spiritual walk or anything like that at that point in my life. I mean, I knew about Jesus and God and that stuff, but I just wasn't really into it at that point in my life.
So when you walk out of that pew, you obviously knew enough to know that God was speaking to you.
Yes.
Which is super powerful. And I think sometimes we don't listen. We might chalk it up to, oh, that's a coincidence, or did I really hear that or whatever? But you just talked about like obedience. So you said yes, even if it wasn't that you were super excited. You just said yes. And then to think like, I would imagine if this was me, I'd be like, okay, all right, we're going to go win a national title. I'm going to get all of this stuff. But then for God to take that away from you within a year, not because of a bunch of injuries but just like to sit and to listen again, I think that's just amazing. So what did your walk with Jesus look like in college then, as you're kind of off on your own, you have this opportunity, right? You're not forced to go through the motions in the same way that you probably are when you're at home. And so what did that look like?
That's when it took off. Really, during basketball, the freshman year I played basketball there, basketball was still my driving force. I was at Trinity Bible College to play basketball. I mean, I was thankful I had met what will become my wife and totally in love with her and that part of it. But basketball was still kind of the driving factor behind me. It kind of dictated my schedule, was when we had practices, when we were hitting the road for road trips or whatever it happened to be. And then when that was gone after that, it was like, okay, now what are you going to do, Chad? And that's when I started to get serious about, okay, now you got to dive in and get serious about your faith. You got to get involved. What type of things can you do to help out others? And that's when I really, my network went from my friend network, because prior to that, I'd say it was a clique. It was the basketball team was my group of friends. And mainly those were the main people that you were with, because you, by your schedule, you eat together. You eat every meal together when you're in college with your sports team. You're working out together, your sports team. Your class schedule revolves around that. And so your entire life during that season revolves around those basketball guys. For me, it was around that basketball team. The next year, I'm not part of that. I'm not at that table in the lunchroom. I'm not at that study table or whatever happens to be. And so I really expanded myself. I found other people to hang out with. I found other people that would like interest me and they invite me to go things. And that's when my spirituality really took off. I met my freshman year, the craziest combination would be me, a kid from South Dakota, and this wild and crazy kid from Southern California, ended up being roommates, and we ended up being best friends for all these years together. And that's the two of us really took off together. He played football, I played basketball. So our lives were kind of different in that regard. But the two of us just clicked and we really started to hold each other accountable for what God was going to do. You know, what was God saying to us? You know, we started to read the Bible together. We'd start to have more devotions and prayers and things like that. And that's when my spirituality really started to take off within what can God do to you? What can God do with you, Chad, in this world? It's not about me and a ball and a hoop anymore. It's about what can I do in this world to help others find out about this Jesus that I've been fortunate enough to hear about? What can I start to do? So that's when it really started to take off, was my second year in Allendale. And then I was only in Allendale 2 years. After that, I felt like there was like, honestly, there was like this release. And so I moved to Aberdeen, South Dakota, went to Northern State, was a student there, got married to my wife. And that's when life, you know, started to get into the adult life, as they say. You know, that's when adult life took off for us.
Yeah. And so did you feel like you were called to be a teacher all along as well?
I was. When I was really young, we had a gentleman in our church that had a sports car. And so he was an accountant. So when I was really young, it was like, I want to be an accountant because he's got a sports car and he would take us out for rides. But once I got into the middle school, high school, that's when I figured I want to teach. Like, I loved being around kids. I've coached kids ever since I can remember. I've always been out coaching something with kids, being involved in some sort of camp or whatever it happens to be. And so that's when it got me the passion to start to teach, and that I want to head that route. And that's where I ended up in at Northern State, because they have a very good teaching education program. And so that's where I ended up transferring down to Northern and finishing up my bachelor's degree down at Northern State. And that's where I got into education. I was supposed to going to go into high school originally. I kind of thought I want to be in the high school realm. As you get your practicum and these experiences, I kind of find myself gravitating more towards those fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth grade kids. I just really, those are the kids that sometimes kind of get put off, like people don't want to be around them because there's a lot going on in those kids' lives. There's a lot going on in their lives, and most of it does not involve school or education. And so that's where I found myself wanting to be around them. I've got a lot of experiences that I thought, hey, I can relate to you. I can relate to what you're going through in these areas for this part. And so that's where I really kind of got into the education realm. I was fortunate when I came to Bismarck. I've worked at some schools that have students that are going through a lot of challenges outside of school. School is the safest place for most of these kids that I've had the opportunity to be around. School is the safest and the most structured place for many of the students I get to be around. And so in my life, I've had a lot of challenges. I've been, like, when I was in sixth grade, we went through bankruptcy. I remember losing everything, losing our cars, our house, everything that we had was completely taken away from us. My dad went back to college. He was away from us at that time. So I learned what that was like to kind of maintain. How do you handle life? Because he would come home on the weekends. He was doing his absolute best. He would come home on weekends and work and be there to support us and still try to attend, you know, sporting events that he could do with us during that time of our lives. But I learned a lot of things during that part of my life. How do you handle things? How do you take care of things on your own? That's where I've always had the job. So I could be like, hey, I know I can relate to work in this part. So my students, many of them are going through challenges of their lives. I can understand what that's like. I moved. My freshman year, we moved to a new town where I knew absolutely nobody. So I can relate that to my students with what many of them are, the new kid, if you will. I understand what it's like to be the new kid. I get that when you're going through that part of your life. I've been the couch hopper. I mean, it's not something we don't brag about or anything like that. The circumstances of life brought it where in one school year, we moved 5 times from different places. I've been where, you know, you don't know exactly where is it that I'm going to be settling down tonight. And so I can relate to many of my students. I understand that. I can have a conversation with them. My heart can feel for them. I can relate to them. It's not just, oh, I feel bad for you. No, literally, I can, here, let me tell you about my life. Like, it's not about me. It's about how can I help you during this? I get what you're going through. When a 13-year-old is telling you those stories or sharing something with you, I can be like, hey, I've got something I want to share with you that I want you to understand. I've been there, and this is what you can come out of this. This is how, you know, I don't know the path that you're going to be able to take to get out of this, because when you're 13, you don't know the path, but I want you to know there is a path of how you can get out of what you're going through at this point of your life. And because I've been there, and even to this day, I spent most of my growing up years sleeping on a couch. Like, that was, I never had like a bedroom, really. I've never really had one. And so even today, it's kind of awkward, like, all these years later, life is really stressful and worried them. I go and sleep on the couch. Like, that is my, that is a comfort place for me. My wife will be like, are you kidding me? But that is just a comfort place for me, because I've been through that. That was my life growing up. And I don't say it poorly at all. It's not woe is Chad at all. It's like, God put me through all this, helped us out through it. I'm not bitter at all about it, because now when I'm working with these students, when I'm teaching kids and a kid comes in and you can tell they're just frazzled, they've had a tough night. It's not, whoa, I feel bad for you. It's, I see you. I understand what's going on here in your life. That's where teaching, that's where I love teaching kids. Like, I totally love teaching middle schoolers. I love where I'm at right now in my life with teaching middle schoolers, because I can stop what I'm doing and I can see a student. I see who they are. I really, truly see what they're going through, because I can understand that. I've been through that in my life. And that's something that's really within the last years of my life and my teaching part that I've really kind of grasped onto that content, like that concept, excuse me, that the content can pause. Yes, we need to learn about how many continents and all that stuff. But you know what? At this moment, I need to pause and I need to stop by this student. I need to just bend down beside them and say, hey, I'm glad you're here today. And that's the circumstances. I know it was a long-winded answer, but that's all the circumstances that brought me into teaching, all the circumstances of my life. I can pinpoint all these pins in my life that led me to teaching, and that's where I'm at today. Am I the greatest teacher in the world? Absolutely not. There are phenomenal teachers that are way better than me, and I totally understand that. My thing is, hey, you know what? I'm going to see you. I want to see you, and I care about you, and that's what it is. And when the woman was bleeding in the Bible and she touched Jesus' garment, this is something that just sticks out to me so much. He turned and he looked at her. It wasn't just like, who was that? It was like, no, he paused. He was being pushed. I mean, he had a crowd around him. Okay, this was the celebrity. He was on his way to do a healing, and he paused and he looked down at her and he talked to her specifically. It was not about the crowd. And that's what I try to do in my classroom. And that's where my passion comes out. It's not, yes, I love having 28 kids in my classroom most days, but you got to pause and say, I see you. And at this moment, and it might be a good thing. A kid might be having an amazing day. Like, hey, how did it go last night? Like, they may have done an amazing task last night, something was sports related or something academic or something at home, whatever it is. And let's stop. And it's also not just the downtrodden, the tough of life, but it's also about stopping and saying, how did that go? How was it? You know, how was your game last night? And that's what I love to hear about. That's what I love about middle schoolers, because they want to share with you. They're willing to share with you. They're not just going to blow you off. They're going to, if you will pause and invest, they're going to share back with you.
For sure. Wow. And so you also coach. You just had talked about how you coach football and you coach basketball
and
track as well.
Yes, I do.
And so I would imagine, because there's like the level of openness that some people will get with teachers that are willing to invest, like you said, willing to pause, right? There's some kids that probably aren't going to connect as well in the classroom, but connect on the football field or on the track. And so I see this like big web of Chad's calling and how it is so interconnected between coach and teacher. So I'd imagine that you have very similar philosophy when you're coming to a football practice or a track meet in the spring.
Absolutely. Yeah. I love coaching kids. I mean, anytime you're coaching middle schoolers, it's a controlled circus or chaos or whatever you want to say. It is so much fun out there. I just love coaching because you've got kids that have lots of experience. They've got a lot of experience within whatever sport it happens to be in. You've got kids that have never played the sport before in their life, but they all deserve my best effort and whomever is coaching with me, our best effort at that moment. So I love it. I love investing in the kids. I love just talking to them, putting my, you know, like in football, you put your arm around the kid on the shoulder pads and you just talk to him for a moment. Hey, how's it going? Or, hey, that was a good play. Just those simple things like that. You know, simple things like that you can pause and do. So I coach football. Then I'd have a little season off, if you will, by the layout of the calendar. And then in the winter, I have boys basketball that I coach eighth grade. And then the spring, I do the long jump coach, and that's for boys and girls. So you got 140 kids out for track. Of those 140, 100 are going to long jump. And so you get the chance to just, while you're standing there raking up a pit and talking to a kid about their steps, you get a chance just to have a quick conversation with some of them. Like, hey, how you doing today? It's good to see you. Whatever it happens to be in that regard. So I love doing that. It gives me an opportunity to connect with more students. And that's something that's really powerful to me. I just want to be able to connect with more kids and get to know them. It's not necessarily always going to be on a deep level. I totally get that. But hey, if at the end, if a kid jumps into the pit and I say, hey, nice jump, Ryan. That was a really good jump by you. I made something positive for you that day. At least I saw you. My biggest thing is I saw you and I recognized you at that moment. And so I recognized something that you did and I acknowledged it by saying your name.
Yeah. So where did, you know, we've heard your past, college, and what led you into teaching and the incredible impact and intentionality you have in the classroom and in the long jump pit and on the football field and on the basketball court. We've heard about your faith journey and your growth of your faith. Where did FCA enter your story? And yeah, kind of how did that work?
I was not involved in FCA in high school. We had one. It met, I think, on a Sunday evening or something like that. I can't recall exactly. I was not involved in it. FCA, my involvement got into it when I came up to the middle school. When I came up to the middle school, one of the other teachers within our building, she just came to me one day, and she had been teaching it or helping be a huddle leader for years. And she just came to me and said, would you ever like to come and help out at FCA? I just kind of noticed something about it. It might be something you like to do. And it was kind of, it totally caught me off guard because one, this teacher and I, she's a legend in teaching, but our paths did not cross because we were not on the same team. She taught a different content than I taught. She taught a different grade level than I taught. Like in the building, my room was probably about as far away from her room as you can get. And she came to me one day just out of the blue and came and asked me this in the morning, you know, out of the blue. And honestly, I was like, oh, maybe I would like to get involved in FCA. I don't know anything about FCA. And so I went to a huddle that week on a Wednesday morning, went to the huddle and just kind of was part, you know, hovered in the back, if you will, kind of like the new kid just sat in the back and watched as it unfolded and observed. And I just thought, I want to be a part of this. It was just like, I want to be a part of this. And so I just shared it with her. I was like, yeah, I would like to help out. Whatever I can do to help out, just let me know. And she was great. Like my first year, she just kind of let me just kind of observe. I was the donut guy. I'd pick up the donuts and bring the donuts. And then she would kind of lead the huddle. And every now and then she would kind of like ask, hey, let's ask Mr. Eben, what do you think about this? Or Mr. Eben, what do you think about that? She just kind of plucked me in very slowly. She was great about just mentoring me, bringing me into it very slowly, realizing that I'm just kind of figuring out this FCA part of it and what it involves. So that's how I got involved in it. And then, so I did that for several years, kind of got a little more involved each year, kind of got a bigger role, if you will. She retired. Another teacher came on about the same time I did, another younger teacher. And so her and I kind of started to lead it then. And so we co-led it together in her room. And so then that was once the senior teacher had retired, it was like, okay, now you guys are in charge. Like you guys need to come up with the Bibles. What's the lesson going to be? What's the flow going to be? What's the environment going to be? What's your FCA going to look like? She was a legend, but we can't carry on what she had done. We have to kind of make it our own at that point in time. And she kind of told us that at the end, she's like, okay, you guys do what you need to do to keep kids, you know, whatever it takes that you guys need to do. I did what I needed to do at my time. And so that's where I got involved in FCA. So now I've been doing it now 10 plus years. I kind of lose track. I'm really bad about that stuff.
That's okay.
I literally lose bad.
That's okay. And so you had a couple more volunteers that were helping you. Then COVID hit and COVID was pretty devastating to almost every huddle in Bismarck, at least. And I know throughout FCA it was a really difficult time in Bismarck, you know, with some scheduling things and just uncertainty. I would assume Wachter was also impacted by that.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. We weren't exempt from the COVID. Yes. The impact of COVID. Yeah. Prior COVID, we were probably running somewhere right around in the 20s for our huddles. We were running right around in the 20s for our huddle. COVID hit and just like everything in the world. I mean, everything just, and it just devastated. And then when we were, you know, got the thumbs up, if you will, the green light that clubs and organizations could begin to meet again, it was down to just a handful of kids. And we went through that year and we still invested. I want to say, the co-leader that was with me, we prayed for every huddle. We prayed over top of the huddles prior to it. We planned, we prepped, we did all the work that we needed to be done, but just the kids weren't coming. It just was not coming. But the kids that were there, they were great. I loved those 5, 6, 7, 8 kids that were there. They had great discussions, conversations, but it really did impact our numbers. And we were really kind of distraught because then we thought, okay, the next year we're like, okay, now it's going to take off again. It kind of, Colby's in the rear view mirror, and it never, the next year it was still, we'd hover around, maybe hit double digits. Like a couple of times I was able to buy two packs of donuts, and that was an exciting moment for us, but we just never really kind of got it going. And I remember, I believe that's when you came on staff, Ryan, and I remember sitting across from you at Bone Shaker with our other leader at the time, Alyssa. And we were just pretty, you were very, you know, you're sharing with us about your role and coming on, your excitement level. And I remember just looking at you and saying, how can we get kids here, Ryan? We used to have, you know, in our 20s, and since COVID, we're, you know, hovering in the low teens if we can hit double digits. And I remember just kind of being blunt with, or honest with you at that time. And Alyssa was also, we were just like, we want, is this some, are we the right people for this? You know, we honestly, I think we both said to you, like, if you have somebody else in mind that you think can lead this, we will step aside, because if it's not us, if there's somebody else that you think can get this going again, we'd be more than happy to get out of your way and let somebody else take over this part of it.
Yeah, I remember that conversation, and just the, I think what you and Alyssa were expressing was what a lot of people had been experiencing, at least in North Dakota, globally through FCA, maybe, maybe not. But in North Dakota, just like there was no staff in Bismarck to help you. You're really on your own and figuring out on your own. And you ran into COVID and kids weren't, you know, there was just everything about that, right? And like you said, there just wasn't a lot of momentum. And momentum is really powerful. And so I just remember leaving that conversation and I was like, first of all, these people are the right people. That was clear. But I just think about the power of prayer. And I think what has been pretty clear is that there's a serious hunger for Jesus when you focus on Jesus. And so let's just do a quick flyover of the last couple of years, because, you know, just to bring it into context, in the 20s, as far as people showing up before COVID, kind of in the 5 to 10, maybe a dozen, maybe you have to get to that second box of donuts. But then since 2023, and this has been a testament to leaders that are intentional on campus, that are intentional about their kids, inviting kids. It's been about kids that are intentional about inviting their friends. And at the end of the day, it's been, God has been moving in incredible ways, because in a 2-year span, last week, you had told me at the beginning of this that you had over 80 kids in a huddle.
We did.
In your classroom.
We did.
At 8 o'clock in the morning. And that's just incredible. So just over the last, you know, now pretty much 2 years, because it was probably October of 2023, I think was kind of your relaunch was somewhere in October of 2023. And I know Jordan, who's area rep, he came to one of your first huddles, and it has just, there's been so much growth, not just in the numbers. The numbers are a thing, but more importantly, in the depth of the huddle. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about that. Yeah.
Buckle up.
Let's do it.
This is where they're going to think that you put it on 1.5 or 2.0.
Hey, let's,
this is where I get excited.
Let's go.
I start talking really fast.
Let's
I
go.
Get excited now. It was. And yeah. So Jordan came, and actually our very first meeting, our launch, we had zero kids.
Oh yeah.
Nobody showed up.
Yes.
Like we had zero kids there. I mean, we had leaders, we had donuts, and we had nobody showed up when we first launched it, when we came back for that school year. And honestly, we were like, oh my word, this is not for us. We were like, what do we do? Like, you know, and Jordan was brand new on staff. And he's awesome. And I think he was just like, I'm not sure. This wasn't in the manual. What do you do when nobody shows up for a huddle? And so literally we had nobody there. And we honestly were very discouraged when we left that one. You know, went through the school day, still tried to change lives, have a positive environment about it. But then we all just decided like, hey, I don't know what's going to happen, but we're going to keep doing this. We're not going to quit. We're going to plan. We're going to prep. We're going to pray. And we're going to buy donuts and let's see what happens here. And we're just going to get this thing going. And literally just a few kids came the second week, and then a few more came the next week, and then a few more came. And we were sticking to the course. We were like planning, prepping, praying. We were doing what we needed to do within every huddle. That was our intent. Like we're going to plan. We're like, we're going to have, we believe we're going to have in the 20s. Like our plan was like, we're going to plan if we have 20 kids, we need to have 20 desks, 20 chairs, everything set up for it. We're going to prep. We're going to do everything we need to do. We're going to have a great study. We're going to pray over top of it. We're going to pray for the kids ahead of time. And we just kept, we maintained, we just kept going through it. And it was God. God just started bringing kids in. And by the end of that year, we were running in the 20s. We were like, hey, we're buying 3 packs of donuts. This is awesome. You know, at those times. And that was a phenomenal, just to see God, like literally the first one, when you have nobody there, when you're doing a launch and you think, all right, they're going to come, and nobody came until the end of the year. We were running in the 20s, and Jordan was so committed. He would come, and the vast majority of time that Jordan came, he didn't say a thing to the kids. And I totally understand why. He just kind of hovered in the back and he was praying. And he was not just praying for the kids, he was praying for us. Like, that was the thing that like, your staff, Ryan, has been so phenomenal. Like, I know they can't be everywhere. I know, like, every huddle wants them there all the time so that they can see all the great things that is happening within FCA. But every time, I know that when we gather, in our case, we gather Wednesdays, that huddle has been prayed over, not just by the leaders, but by your staff has prayed over that huddle ahead of time. They prayed for those kids. They prayed for us as leaders. And so we came out of that year feeling good. Honestly, we felt good. We were kind of back, if you want to put it in that context. We were even better than back, feeling into that context. And then the next year, we were here meeting, and you shared something, Ryan, at our kind of our fall launch or fall get back together with the huddle leaders. You shared that this school year, I want you guys to pause and give kids the chance to actually accept the gospel of Christ. And you were very vulnerable at the time because you shared that in your time, you don't know if you had ever, as a huddle leader, if you'd had ever paused and given the kids that opportunity. If that was, you'd shared that in a very vulnerable, you know, you shared that with the huddle leaders. And I sat there and thought, I've never done that. Like, I have never in my time of being a huddle leader paused and thought, what if the kid doesn't know Christ? Can I help them find Christ? Can I walk them through those steps? Is there something that I need to be doing? Because up to that point, we were doing great studies. We were studying the Word. We were having great conversations about the Word. We were in the Word. And it just hit me like, I've never done that. I've never actually given kids the opportunity to share Christ.
Yeah, I think when people think about FCA, sometimes people say, well, that's a youth group. And a youth group has some assumptions, typically. I mean, you want new people to come to youth group and stuff like that. But I spent a lot of my time thinking of FCA as a youth group that everybody that comes knows Jesus. When in reality, an FCA huddle is a mission field. And that's really cool that you wrestled with that. So what, when you started to think about how do I share the gospel, like what'd that lead you to?
So it did. So let me backtrack, if I might, just for a moment. I'm sorry, I just need to backtrack just for a moment, because there's a couple of things that are pertinent to where the story goes here. That in the fall, or I apologize, excuse me, in the spring of 23, the co-leader, Alyssa, she'd been phenomenal. Her and I had been leaders for, I don't know, up to that point, maybe 8 years or whatever. I always forget years. And she took a district level job. And so she was not going to be able to be a leader anymore. Totally happy for her, something that she wanted, happy for her. We'd always met in her room. And so I was kind of like, okay, well, we'll meet in my room, you know, at Washington Middle School. You know, it's one of those things, all right, we'll just meet down here. Well, that spring of that year, the administration, you know, our school had gotten bigger. We had added on teachers to our staff, and we had kind of gotten spaced out with who we were for that teaming concept with our kids being together with us. And so administration said, hey, we're going to reshuffle some of the classrooms. We're going to reposition some teachers with where they're located within the building so that, you know, you're with your team of teachers. Totally makes sense. My team was one of the teams that we got moved. And so I packed up and we headed up and I got my new assigned classroom, if you will. I got the biggest classroom in Washington Middle School. Like, I am the biggest classroom in Washington Middle School. It used to be 2. It's 1. Like, there was a wall there and they took the wall out and I got the biggest classroom in Washington Middle School. Like, I'm like, that's a God thing. That's a God wink at that moment of time. Like, God just winked at me and said, something's, you know what I mean? At that moment, I didn't think of it at that time. I'm not going to lie to you. I thought, sweet, this is awesome. I got all this space. But now looking back, it's like, okay, that's a thing. You know, that's a God thing. Going into that school year, I'm like, okay, who's going to help me lead? I was kind of pondering it. I get this email from this brand new teacher who introduces herself to me and says, I'm the new counselor at Walker Middle School. I love FCA. I've been involved in FCA my whole life. My dad's an FCA huddle leader in Wyoming. I would like to help you lead. Fantastic. Let's do it. Like, I've got a co-leader now. And Abby joined the team and she's phenomenal. She's got this passion for it. Great. We're sitting here at that huddle that I mentioned where you shared your vulnerability for that moment about sharing Christ. And you shared, and you guys had laid on the tables, the four bracelets that have the signage of who the four is and who really is what we've become known for, this four with the heart, the divide sign, the cross, and the question mark. In the summer of 22, I have to think my years out, right? My son got elected to be one of the captains of his football team for his high school, him and some other of the players. And him and one of the other players said, they decided, hey, we're going to start a Bible study after summer workouts and trainings and all that stuff. Once a week after our workout, we're going to have a completely volunteer Bible study. Some of the kids want to come, we'll have it up over here. They want to come, they can join us. They came across from the organization crew, the four, and they started sharing the four with their teammates and what that did. And so I saw the four and I remember asking Derek, explain the four to me. Like, what? I don't explain the bracelet that you have on. Can you kind of explain or walk me through that? He walked me through what each of them represents, what they signify. And then he talked to me about what it meant to him. Personalized. It wasn't just, yeah, this means this. It was a personalized story to it. And I saw the impact that it was having on him and that he was sharing it with others and he was inviting others, other teammates, other people in his school. He was sharing the bracelet and kind of what it signified for him. And I was like, okay, there's something to that. Well, at that meeting here, when we were joining here where we're meeting right now, you had laying on the table the bracelets of the four. And then I said FCA, and I thought, okay, there's something here. That's another God wink, as I call it. And I remember taking some and I was like, all right, let's see what this thing, let's use this tool. I've seen personally what this tool can do. It's just a tool. It's not, but it's just a tool. And I thought, okay, let's see what this tool can do. I think the first time, I think you brought me, I don't know, 30 or whatever it was. We gave them out. We explained to the kids, like, this is what it is. And at that moment, we're going to talk to the kids about this is who Jesus is. And this is the steps. This is what each of these represents. We watched a short video series. We did devotionals on it. That year, we spent our entire focus was on the four. Not one time over, they did not go 1 month without us sharing the gospel with the kids. Like, it was so like within, Abby had the passion because she had seen it. My co-leader, Abby. I had it, the passion within it. And we were giving out bracelets. And I'm going to guess probably 90 to 95% of the texts that you or Jordan got from either Abby or that year were, hey, do you got some more bracelets and some more Bibles? And we gave out hundreds of bracelets because it was the kids grasped the idea of this isn't about keeping it for me. They're going to give it on to a friend and explain what the four represents. And when you explain what the four represents, you pass it on to that person. And then the next week, the kid would come back and say, hey, I need a new one. I had kids that were wearing them. I had them as bookmarks within their books within the classroom. And then you guys brought us some Bibles, some FCA Bibles. And I was like, all right, let's give these things out. And I literally, and Abby and I, and we explained to them, this is our gift to you. We do not want this Bible back. This is a gift to you. Because we care about you. Again, we see you, we care about you. And we want you to keep this thing. And we walked them through, like, you don't start at the beginning of this. This is not a normal book. We talked about what this book represented and where do you start when you're going to read this book. And before you start reading, just say, God, if you're real, reveal yourself to me. It doesn't have to be a long prayer. Just ask him that. And at the end, when you're done reading read a small section a day, just say, thank you, Jesus. We wanted it to be very simple to start it out, simple for kids. Okay. Kids have an understanding about them. They grasp what's going on in the world. We want to act like they don't. Kids are curious. They're looking for what's out there. So we're going to present it, what's out there. We're going to give it to them straight up what's out there. And so we shared the gospel with them and that caught on. All of a sudden we had kids coming in like, you got more Bibles? I don't, but I'll get more. And so we gave out hundreds of Bibles that year to within our FCA. And it's not about Abby. It's not about Chad. It's not that at all. It's God is just saying, hey, share the gospel. That's what we're called to do. We're called to share the gospel. Like I know I jokingly say, students these days, they're seed spreaders. They're not soil testers. I love to tell people that. Like I, in my generation, and I know Ryan, you and I are about the same age, we would always like build, you know, and I'm not mocking this. We would build a relationship. We would go through a process with somebody. And then when that person was going through a really difficult time, we'd be like, hey, I got Jesus for you. And I'm not disrespecting that philosophy whatsoever. But kids are like, hey, do you need Jesus? Here, let me tell you about him. They're talking about it. It was amazing the amount of times that kids would just be like, hey, I shared it with my friend in the lunchroom. I shared it with my cousin. I shared it here. I shared it there. People are seeking the gospel. God said, it's harvest time. It's ready to rock. And so that's really what these middle schoolers are doing. And so it just caught on and it's so passionate that we just continue to share the four. The four is a tool to Jesus. And that's the tool that right now is working for us. And that's what we're going to do is we're going to continue to share about the four to these kids. So they grasp it all? No, I'm old and I don't grasp it all. But you know what? They know that there's something out there. Kids are seeking things. They're not just addicted to their device. They're seeking out stuff. Their minds are looking for what's out there. They have big questions. And we don't want to answer those big questions, but we're willing to say, hey, you know what? There's a God that loves you. And you know what? He sees you. He cares about you and he loves you. And that's where it really has taken off. Like I love my students, like I've said. And yeah, this last week, we had 83 kids in a classroom. Like you don't get 83 kids, middle schoolers in a classroom. Okay. You don't get it. Like we had kids, I don't care. They sit on my desk. They sit in my chair. They're sitting on top of desks. The chairs are everywhere in the room. But you know what? They're hearing about Jesus. We don't just have it in there so that we can go and play some games. They're hearing about Jesus. And you guys were gracious enough to send us more Bibles. And I was like, you know, and I explained to them the gift and who needs one. And boom, hands are up. And again, I have more kids. And so before you and I started today, I said, hey, Ryan, you got some more Bibles? And every time, to your credit, it's always been, yes, I have more Bibles for you, Chad. Every single time, it's always, I have more Bibles for you. Kids are seeking out the word of God. And so that's where it really is. Like we're just passionate about explaining to these kids, is every single one of them going to accept Jesus and walk with him for their entire life? Absolutely not. Did I screw up? Absolutely. We all do. But at this moment of time where we're at, we're going to share about Jesus to a bunch of 12, 13, 14 year old kids. And that's where we're called to do. And that's what it's about at this point in time, be able to do that. And you know what? I hope we get 100. I hope I get 100 kids in there. I hope I get 100 kids. That's not a numbers thing. It's not a bragging thing. Those kids need to hear about Jesus because it's never the same kid. It's always new students that are there based on their schedules. They have a lot going on. It's never about numbers. I don't play the numbers game, if you will. It's about hearing about Jesus. And so that's where our passion is for these kids. Wow.
You know, to just kind of get some specific stories, because I think there's a couple of interesting ones. I remember back to that. So this would have been two school years ago when Jordan was sitting in the back of the classroom and just praying over the class and praying over the huddle. I remember there was a girl that had taken out a Bible that she had gotten like the week before, and she opened it up and it obviously had been read. That's like, for us as a staff, that was the point. When Jordan and I were talking about that, it was like, she read it and she highlighted it and she folded a page over. Hey, if we hand out 100 Bibles and 10 of them, a kid like invests in and reads, and that is so worth it, right? If one kid is like, man, I've never had a Bible before, but they grab the Bible and they open it up and they take on the challenge that you have to read a little bit, to pray about it, to thank God for it, just how amazing that is. You had said something last spring that it's really difficult to go down the halls at Wachter Middle School and not see somebody with a four bracelet on. That's pretty amazing.
It is a testament to God and to the students. It's nothing to do with us, but it's totally a testament to God and the students that, yeah, when they want that. And do they all understand it? No. Could it be a fad thing for many? Absolutely. But hey, that's a pretty good fad to have, be rocking.
Hey, if you sit down and look at your wrist and you're looking at the fact that God loves you and that it's our sin that separates us from God, but Jesus came to pay for that. And that question mark at the end, right? Like if we could just have more people thinking about that and reminding themselves of the importance of the gospel. I know I have to do that myself. Like I need the gospel every day. And I need to remind myself that I don't have it all together, but Jesus paid for that when I fall short, which is so often. Just absolutely incredible to think about your story, you know, and I think back to a couple of things you shared very early. You shared about your coach, right? Who just showed up and rebounded for you. You talked about your son and how you just showed up and rebounded for him. A ministry of presence, just being there with somebody, how your son then finds a four bracelet and it makes an impact on his life and on the lives of his teammates, and how God used all of that to connect with you, FCA, as well, and the importance of sharing the gospel. And really, it has become just an incredible thing to hear, keep hearing stories of Wachter and just what's going on. And it's so cool that, to bring it all the way back, you started with your first story with kids that probably had never gone to a huddle, that are sitting in the biggest classroom at Wachter Middle School. And when you say, oh, FCA huddle leader, they're like making the connection, and how awesome for that. So just kind of in closing, if there's a huddle leader that's listening to this, right? If there's a teacher that's listening to this, or a coach, it could honestly be a parent, right? In a community, it doesn't have to be a teacher that leads an FCA huddle. What would your advice be to somebody who's like, I want that in my school?
Probably one of them is love the kids. Like, honestly, like, if you don't love kids, it's not going to work out for you. You need to have a passion and love for the kids. Accept the kids who they are. Do they make errors? Do they make mistakes? Absolutely. We all do. I tell my students, I tell my athletes, anything. Every time I tell them, I make 10,000 mistakes a day. Like, when somebody makes an error, like, they make a mistake, they make a fumble, whatever it happens to be, it's okay. And have a lot of grace. Have love and have grace for kids. There's no magical formula. There's not like, hey, if you do it like this, you're going to end up. No. And prayer. Just pray. Pray for kids. Like, that's my biggest thing. If somebody's listening to this, anytime you drive by a school, public, private, whatever, shoot up a quick little arrow prayer for those kids there. We have no idea. I don't care if they're little kids, if they're elementary, if they're middle school, high school, the amount of stress and pressure that these kids are under these days that they're facing. We can't fathom it as adults, what the stress that they're feeling. Shoot up a quick little arrow prayer for the people at that school, for the students there. Like, we need to surround people with prayer. We need to surround our schools with prayer, with what's going on there. Are our schools perfect? Absolutely not. But how about if we just shoot up a prayer for them rather than just complaining about it? Let's just shoot up some prayers for them. But if you want to be a huddle leader, basically, is you just have to have grace, and you just have to have love and a lot of energy if you're going to have middle schoolers. You got to bring the energy if you're going to be a middle school huddle leader. But that's the biggest thing, to do it. Just love them. They just want to be, like I said, my total belief is, as an educator, see the student and believe in the student. If you'll just see them and believe in them, great things are going to happen. There will be times when there's disappointments, and that's life. But you know what? There's going to be a lot of exciting things if you'll just see them and believe in them.
Yeah. And I love that. I love that takeaway. When you drive by a school, pray for the kids, pray for the adults, pray for the teachers. And God, you know, I think that God is continuing to do amazing things in schools, in the lives of kids. Like, this is a generation that is, I'm like getting excited for what's going to happen.
What this generation's going to do, unbelievable.
Because there is a real hunger for the truth. And we all know there's only one truth, and that's scripture.
That's right. And if we're not going to share it with them, they're going to find a different one. And so you need to be willing to do that, to share it with them.
Thank you so much for the time today.
Absolutely. Thank you, Ryan.
Thanks again for being part of Stories of His Glory. If today's episode inspired you, take a moment to share it, and be sure to follow or subscribe so you won't miss what's coming next. Psalm 96:3 reminds us to declare His glory among the nations, His wondrous works among all peoples. The field is yours. Now go glorify Him.